This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I'm joining you today from Lexington, Kentucky. I would like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206, and to those of you tuning into our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. Please, if you're able to help, this is what a wonderful organization. They provide financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. Please check out the website www.pdjf.org. Now, our guest this evening, another Hall of Famer, he's won the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, the Breeders' Cup Classic. He was an integral part of, in my opinion, the greatest rivalry in thoroughbred racing history. He even beat Secretariat, not once, but twice. He's captured about 100 Grade 1 victories. In total, he's crossed the wire in front 6,795 times to earn over $125 million in earnings. George Velasquez, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Christina.
So, oh my gosh, this is such a pleasure, George, to sit here and talk with you. I told you before we went on air, we're going to need about 5 hours to discuss everything you've accomplished, George. And just, wow, looking back, did you have any idea you would accomplish so much in your career?
Well, yes. When I started thinking about it, you know, I'm like, wow, I made it big. And I was coming from a little town that we have no horse racing over there. Wow. We have like match races, 2 horses. Wow. 2 guys drinking in the bar, and one says to the other one, oh, my horse can beat yours. No. So let's run him. And they run for maybe half a mile or so. And that's the race. That's how that grew up.
That's how you started.
Match races maybe once or twice a year.
Wow. And that was in Panama?
That was in Chepo. It's a little town by the name Chepo, C-H-E-P-O. It's about an hour away from the city of Panama.
And there was no real racetrack there. You just had match races.
Match races. No racetrack. Nope.
Now,
the track was in Panama City.
I've heard stories about match races, and I've had a lot of jockeys here on the show from Louisiana, from the bush tracks they rode at. And they tell me stories about riding against chickens and all kinds of things. Did you go up against, did you ever ride against a chicken, George?
No, not really. But I grew up with all kinds of animals.
Not really?
Cattle, bulls, chicken, pigs, horses, everything. All kinds of animals.
So you
grew- a little town, and you know, it was, they used to work like agriculture. By hand. Everything done by hand. You know. So it was like, even though it was, what, 1962, 60, something like that, there was no machinery. You know, it was everything done by hand. So I had to do everything by hand, and I didn't really like that. So that's how my mind was working to do something else.
That had to be a hard life. Working on the farm all the time.
Very, very hard.
And you had, I bet you started at a very young age doing a lot of farm work.
Oh, yes. I started when I was like 7, 8 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. Going to school and come back and the days off. Instead of have it off, I go to work in the rice field.
In the rice field?
Yeah.
Really?
It was tough.
And so growing up, you always had an idea in your mind that you wanted something different than that.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. See, when I saw, some kids, they come to the town from the city, they come to the town because we used to have a nice big wide river, and everybody comes from the city and a big bus, and they go to the river and have fun. So when I see these kids coming in, all well-dressed, and they're looking good and all that, I say, I'd like to look like that someday. And that's why I say, I have to go to the city. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I said, I cannot continue doing this. And then when I was 12 years old, my father, I want to go continue school because in those days in the town, it was only up to sixth grade, and then you had to go to continue school in the city.
Oh.
And then I told my father the school that I want to go into, and he told me, that's too expensive. I can't afford it. So I didn't. I only went to sixth grade, and that was it.
Sixth grade, and that was it. Wow. And then what did you do after sixth grade?
Well, I was working in the rice field. I was working, I used to go, to work in some of the neighbors that they have a rice field. Then I go and ask them, I said, can I work for you tomorrow? And they pay me a dollar for the whole day.
A dollar?
6 a.m. to 4 in the afternoon. $1.
$1.
And then I come home and I give the dollar to my mom, and my mom gave me 25 cents. So I worked the whole day for 25 cents. But
wow.
I was okay. That was all right. I didn't know better. So
yeah.
25 cents was a lot of money for me in those days.
Wow. And then to go on and earn over $125 million in Mount earnings, that's an incredible difference.
It is incredible. What happened was that I had a neighbor by the name Francisco. We call him Pancho. And he used to love horse racing. So he used to go, he used to work in the city and come back to be with his family on the weekends. So on the weekends, when he's come back to Chapel, and he told me one day, you know what? You're small enough. You should be a jockey. I didn't know what he was talking about. A jockey. So he was the one that started the whole thing. He says, you should become a jockey. You're good enough. If you're good enough, you can make a lot of money. You can travel all over the world. You can become famous. And he was the one that put it in my head. So what happened? One day I said to my mom, you know what? I want to leave. I want to go to the city. I want to become a jockey. And my mom is like, a jockey? You want another? You're older enough. You can really help us over here. You want to leave? Okay, you can leave, but don't you ever come back here.
No.
And I was like, I was 12 years old. I said, no way, I can't leave because what about if I don't make it? What am I going to do? She really gave it to me.
So she said, don't come back.
So I stopped thinking about being a jockey for a couple months. But my friend Pancho, he never gave up. He kept telling me, why don't you talk to your mom. I told him what happened. He said, talk to her again. So I keep talking to her. And the next time I talked to her, she was kind of busy in the kitchen and doing something. And I was pulling her dress. And mom, she picked up one of those Quaker Oaks cans, empty, and hit me over the head. Don't you see I'm busy? Leave me alone. So I forgot about being a jockey for another couple of months. But my friend never gave up. He came back again and told me, talk to her. So now what happened? I came back and talked to her again. And she's like, okay, I tell you what. You want to leave? You can leave. Go ahead. But you want to leave with your daddy. You're not going to be a jockey. My daddy was a butcher in the city. and the big meat place. So I agreed with her. I said, yeah, sure, I'll work for him. Now what happened is, here comes this kid that I didn't know about. He was a jockey. He used to come to the city, I mean to the town, and he used to stay like with his family a couple houses away from me, from my house. So one day he showed up in the town with a pony, a saddle, a whip, goggles, helmet, boots, everything else. And he gave a bunch of people an exhibition, and I was there. I was watching everything. And something went inside of me like, I know, I can do that. I know I can do that. Mm-hmm. I know for sure I can do that. So when I came back to my mother, I told her, I want to be a jockey. She said, well, no way. You're going to go to the city, but you're going to work for your daddy. You're going to stay with your, live with your daddy, and you work with your daddy. She said, okay, I agree. But meanwhile, I already spoke to this kid that gave the exhibition to this kid's father. I spoke to him, and I mentioned that I want to become a jockey. And he says, anytime, you know, when you're ready, I can take you to the track. I said, okay, good. So now I came to the city. I'm working for my daddy as a butcher and learning everything. So the kid that he used to have working for him, that was his right-hand man, he let him go because I'm there. Mm. And he didn't have to pay me like he was paying the other kid. And I already learned everything else. So he let him go, and I'm his right-hand man. So one afternoon, we're busy selling, you know, a lot of people in the meat market. So here comes the father of the kid that I met, and they give the exhibition in check. The father's kid was Cesar Bosques. So when I saw him, I said, oh, well, Señor Cesar. He said, oh, hello, how are you? I'm fine. Remember that I told you I want to become a jockey? And you told me you take me to the track. He said, yes, yeah, I remember. Anytime you're ready, I said, I'm ready right now. And I took up the apron, and I told my daddy, listen, I'm going to a track. This is Cesar Bosques. I'm going to learn how to become a jockey. And the answer was like, you sure? Those horses are big horses, you know, big animals. I said, yeah, it's okay. I'm not afraid. So I went. He took me right away. That afternoon, he took me to a track and introduced me to one of the leading trainers by the name Felix Rodriguez. So Felix Rodriguez was the one that... I told him that I want to become a jockey, and the guy introduced me to Felix. And then Felix talked to one of the groomers. He says, hey, listen, take that horse out and let this kid walk him bareback. So I got on it, and it was a big horse, big, good-looking horse. It was a gray horse, beautiful. But it was so big, and every time I looked down, I said, oh, my God, if I fall off from here, I'm going to hurt myself. So I better hold on tight. And I walked him for a mile and a half. I mean, a 1 hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning. The next day, he said, when I finished walking, he said, well, you're going to come with me to the track every morning. Where do you live? He says. And it happened to be like I was living like 2-3 blocks away from him. Mm-hmm. So I say, well, I live this place, in this street, and this. And he say, oh, I'm around the corner. So why don't you just wait for me at the corner of the street, and I take you every morning, he says. I say, beautiful. And now I was there every morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, waiting for him. So he picks me up, I go to a track. And that was the beginning, learning how to do everything, bait the horses, putting bandage on, doing a stall, walking, and everything.
That.
So what happened is that my father moved away from there. So now I'm way up, you know, from the guy. So I couldn't go with him. So I told my father, I said, listen, I have a problem here. I can't, you know, I need money to go to a track. So he used to give me like 50 cents every day. So 50 cents, I spent 30 cents in travel and the buses and everything else to get to the track. I got 20 cents left to have breakfast and lunch because I don't get to see him until nighttime when he comes home after work. And sometimes he never come home. He keeps going. He come home like 1, 2 in the morning. So sometimes I go to sleep without eating.
Oh, my God. And Mr. Rodriguez didn't pay you for your help around the barn?
Excuse me?
He didn't pay you for your help at the track?
No, he didn't pay me anything. Nothing. Nothing. When I was there for maybe a couple months, 2-3 months, and then if he runs a horse and the horse wins, he gave me something. He could give me like $1 or $5, something like that, something. But that was it. You know, I didn't get paid for anything.
Wow.
But then my father said to my father, you know, 50 cents is not enough. So he went up to $1. Then he used to give me $1 every day. That I have to be thankful to my father for that because otherwise I never would have made it.
Without that dollar every day. Wow.
Yeah. And even though if I was sleeping, when he comes home, whatever, late or whatever, he comes home, he put the dollar on the table. So I take my dollar and go in the early morning because he's sleeping. So that was the beginning. What happened, Felix Rodriguez, the trainer I was learning with, he had a horse that was Rudolph from racing. The name of the horse was Susurro. Susurro was a fast horse, but he got Rudolph because he breaks out of the gate, and when he gets around the 3A pole, he gets like a cramp in his hind leg, and he just drag it, and then he has to stop. Mm. They got to pull him up. So he got Rudolph because of that. So he told me, Felix Rodriguez says, you know what, hey kid, get that horse and learn with it, but you have to maintain it. I have to take care of it. So I used to go around the barn, different barns, ask for the leftovers, and I go out to the river, close to the river, and cut some wheat, and I make the horse looking good again because he was skinny. He wasn't taking care of the horse. But I took care of him, and he got fat, you know. And then I started putting the saddle on. Even though I had to go to school to become a jockey. But the school was in a little room with maybe, 10, 12, 15 jockey boys. They want to become a rider. And they have like a big barrel, and they put a rope in it, and they show you how to cross the rope, and you put the feet in the rope and that they have around the, like if it was a saddle. They tied up the ends of the rope and then put them on top of the barrel, and you put the right feet and then the left feet and get the rope in front of you, and that was the saddle. So the teacher was like, okay, we're going to go for 3/4 of a mile. Okay, so he says, okay, you guys get ready, set, go. And then you have to get up, like you getting up on the stirrups. And he would tell you, like, okay, you got to go easy at the beginning. And then coming to a half-mile pole, you started asking your horse to run a little by little. Now you get to a third pole, and then a quarter pole, and you make him switch stride at the turning for home, and you get your whip up, and you hit him a few times, right hand, and switch your left, and you hit him a few times, and come back to the right. So I was getting learning all those things in the barrel. So when I got Susurro, the horse, and then I have a saddle from the barn, you know, the saddles to bridge the horses. Mm-hmm. And then I put it on top of Susurro, and I used to to go jogging and walking, jogging, and then started galloping. And that's how I learned. But meanwhile, I got the idea from the teacher in the room. And that was, this is 1962. Beginning 62, I started learning, and I got my license, and I remember December 8, 1963. So it took me 1 year to learn. And the first time I rode, I was fourth. It was a big field. I finished fourth. There was a guy, become a good friend of mine. He was a jockey, but he was much older than me, by the name Antonio. And Antonio was in the same race with me. And we were way back. And he looked at me and he said, "Hey, Pelao," which is me, "kid. Hey, kid, pick up your reins." The reins were hanging, you know. So he said, "Pick up the reins." So I picked up the horse, the reins. And when he felt the beat in his mouth, he took off running. Excuse me. And he come back, finished fourth. Now, the first fourth finishers, they're supposed to wait out in front of the public. So that was a big deal for me. That was like, wow.
All right, you made it.
I thought I was a jockey then, you know.
You made it.
waiting myself in front of everybody there. And I was so happy, forget about it. But I remember also the night before, I couldn't even sleep thinking about the race.
Wow. You're so excited.
So that was, yeah, that was kind of my beginning. And they used to have in those days, like every Sunday, they have one race for non-winners, jockeys non-winners. So whoever wins, he's out of the group. And he can ride with the professionals or with the other riders. I could never win a race. And there was no more races for non-jockeys, non-winners. And I couldn't, because I couldn't buy a mount. Mm. So, and one day I got, the big chance came one day that one of the kids that by the name, Cedeño, Manuel Cedeño, he was the best of the group. He was winning left and right, you know, and he was the best apprentice. So one day when a horse went through the fence with him and he had a spill and he broke his arm, so he was out for 6 weeks. In those 6 weeks, I got myself a ride from a gentleman that helped me, another trainer that helped me a lot. It was Vasco Achon. And I won my first race, and I keep winning. And all of a sudden, when he went down, he was off. He was out for 6 weeks. I picked up my business, and I started winning and winning and winning. Now, when he came back to ride, I was the one that was winning.
Yeah.
And then there was a competition between Cedeño and myself. And we went on like that the rest of the year, and I went up a leading buck boy.
Leading
because
buck.
He had the spill. Otherwise, I don't think I was going to make it or beat him anyway.
Right. Yeah.
But that was my big chance, and I took advantage of it.
Well,
and I rode, in Panama, they have in those days that you win 60 races, and you become professional. So it took me not too long of a time to win 60 races. I won my 60 races, and I become professional. And then I was one of the leading riders in Panama every year. You know, I rode there for almost 3 years, 2.5 years.
So after 60 races, you lost the bug.
Yeah, you lost your bug.
Yeah.
After 60 races. You win 60 races and then you become professional. So I was running for a good trainer by the name Navarro. Raymond Navarro, I used to win a lot of races for him. So he says, here, now I'm winning, I want to get out of Panama. Because I heard of Braulio Baeza, I heard of Manuel Icaza, and I said, you know, I want to be like them.
Yeah.
So, but I heard that Braulio and Manuel Icaza, to come to United States, he went to Mexico first. He rode in Mexico, and then from Mexico, he jumped into the United States. Now, that's my idea, that I want to go to Mexico. So I got my ticket and everything else. I've spoke to the president of the racetrack in Mexico, and he told me, yes, I'll get you a good stable to ride for. Come. So I'm ready to go. And 2 days before departure, Mr. Navarro, Raymond Navarro, says, Georgie, I don't know if you like this deal, but there's a gentleman in the United States. His name is Fred W. Hooper. Mr. Fred W. Hooper needs a rider. And I don't know if you are interested. I said, of course, that's what I want. I wanted to go to the United States. He says he also brought Braulio Baeza to his country, to the United States. I said, beautiful. Good. So I came to the United States to ride for Mr. Fred W. Hooper, and that was for 3 years contract. And I remember Mr. Navarro, he flew in with me to Miami and then introduced me to Mr. Hooper and his lawyers in Florida, and he flew back to Panama. From Miami, I flew to Atlantic City. So I got to Atlantic City, and then the next morning I meet Mr. Anthony Badaro, that was the trainer at the time. And meanwhile, I talked to my mother, and I said to my mother, you know, I'm going to go for a tryout for this contract, just for 4 days, just 4 days, just a tryout. And what happened, because the visa, the working visa and other stuff, I didn't have anything. So Mr. Hooper was trying to get me all this paper together. I never went back to Panama until a year and a half later.
Wow.
But I was successful when I came back, when I went back. I came to Atlantic City. That was in August 10, 1965. Yes, and I rode my first horse September 20, 1965. And my first horse that I rode, it was for Mr. Hooper, for Anthony Badaro, and she was a little maiden, and I was a maiden. We broke our maiden together.
Broke
so
it.
She won. The filly won, and that was my first ride. I won it.
First ride was a winner. George, let's continue this right after this quick commercial break. Hate to cut you off, but stay with us, folks. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network. But the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
They're moving farther stretch. On the inside, Bold Eagle. On the outside, Partey. Those two are together. Top Avengers drop back third. Gaining ground on the outside, Pleasant Colony. They're moving down the stretch, Partey. Now Pleasant Colony on the outside takes the lead. Partey holds the second in the center of the track past the cab. Television Studio is moving up. Down along the inside, Splendid Speech. Nearing the finish, it's Pleasant Colony drawing away with the lead. Woodchopper gains ground second. Pleasant Colony wins all those points. Woodchopper gets up for second. Partey is the prize third. A photo for fourth.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm Christina McManigal, and tonight I'm joined by jockey George Velasquez, and we just heard your victory, George, aboard Pleasant Colony in the 1981 Kentucky Derby, and I would say that your trip to the United States in 1965 proved to be very successful. 2 years later, you won more races than any other American jockey. And then in 1969, you were tops in money earned, and you just took off, George.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you what. God gave me the stature, you know, the little stature, like 5'2", 5'3", and I am 5'3". And I say, whatever I'm going to do in life, I'm going to try my best, and I'm going to try to be the best I can, you know, do whatever the best I can. So that's what I did. I was dedicated, and I love to ride horses. So I win a stake race, for example. I win a stake race on a Saturday. And after the race, when I finish riding, I go to the barn, see the trainer, if the owners are there, and say hello. And then early morning, the next morning, 6 o'clock, I'm there. So I was dedicated to. So I was lucky also, you know, that I didn't get hurt so many times. I did get hurt in 68, my first time that I went down and I broke my arm. Mm. And I was out of action for six weeks. But anyway, going back to my first winner, which was September 20, 1965, that filly's name was Kip Point. I remember very well. She paid $18. She won by 3/4 of a length. So, and when this kid got hurt and I keep winning and winning and winning and I become a leading buck boy, I won my 60 races. I become a professional. Now I'm riding with the big guys. There was a guy by the name Guillermo Milor, another guy by the name Victor Tejada. There was the top riders, and I had a battle with him, and I'm just a kid, you know, but I was doing all kind of good. So when I came to this country and I won my first race, I'm riding for Mr. Hooper, and when they saw me ride, it was like I didn't have no agent. So, but I look at the overnight and I said, Velasquez. I said, man, I'm in 4 or 5 horses. Wow. And none of them from Mr. Hooper. Hmm. So I said, man, well, when they saw me ride, they liked what they saw. And then they were just like asking Anthony Badara, can I use your boy? So that's how I was on the horses. And I did very well in 65. And then 66, I was second leading rider in the country. I remember there was the winner was Avelino Gomez. He beat me for about 20 winners in 67, and then I won 438 races leading rider in the country. 68, I was way up in front, and I went down in the month of July, and that was it. So now when I came back, I was too far back, and I couldn't make the ground. So in 69, at the end of 68, I moved my tab to New York, from Jersey to New York. And I brought my agent from New Jersey with me. His name was Victor Gilardi. He was one of the best. And I started winning right away in New York. That was 68. So 69, I become leading rider in the country, money one. And that was it. I stay in New York until my retirement.
And George, like I said, I wish we had 5 hours with you, but of course I want to talk in detail about, as I mentioned in the introduction, the greatest rivalry in thoroughbred racing history. You, of course, rode Aladar, second in the Derby, second in the Preakness, second in the Belmont, two affirmed. And let's talk about that. That just had to be, you lost by, what, two lengths combined, all three races?
Yes, the worst thing was the first time I rode Alida was in the Champagne Stakes as a two-year-old. Meanwhile, a firm beat him a few times in Saratoga. Now I rode him in the Champagne, and I went by him like he was standing still, but he didn't get to see me until the last 8 months.
Wow.
So when he finally saw me, anyway, I beat him. After that, he kept beating me and beating me. And I'm looking and thinking like, what did I'm doing wrong that this horse keeps beating me? Let me go back to see the Champagne Stakes. Now in the Champagne Stakes, I was way back, 7-8 lengths. And about the quarter pole turning for home, I went by him. He was entertained by another horse. Then I went by him outside, and I opened up three on him, and he didn't see me. And when he saw me at the 8 pole, he left the other horse and tried to come back and close the gap on me. And I beat him by a length and a half.
Too late.
And my horse was running.
Yeah.
And my horse was running. So I said, and now I know why he beats me, because every time I come to him, he goes with me and he just run what he had to, what he need to. He half a length, a neck, but he loved to win the horse, you know. And my horse was very tough. He kept trying and he kept coming back. But we kept losing. And that was a heartbroken. But it was the best, like you said, the best rivalry in horse racing, I believe.
Absolutely.
I don't think I would see another rivalry like that.
No.
In my lifetime.
No, definitely not.
Those two horses, they were great for racing.
Yeah.
Great for racing. And then when they retired, my horse was a better stud than Affirm.
I was actually going to mention that. He turned out to be great to racing in more than one way and producing, you know, all these great champions later on.
He produced a bunch of champions.
Better than Affirmed, so there you go.
Yes. Now, listen, I went to, I got a contract in Europe to ride for Mr. Fustock, Mahmoud Fustock. And there was a filly that he has in his barn by Alida, and I won that a grade three with her over there in France.
Wow.
So that was so good to feel, so great, you know.
So
like,
satisfying.
Wow,
yeah.
I can have all his daughter over there, and I won.
Wow, that had to be incredible. You later on in your career, you went to France to ride.
Yes, for 1 year, and let's see, it was 87. 87, yes.
How was that? That had to be a lot different, I would think.
It was, yes, a lot different with experience. Very, very nice experience. You know, over here, when USA, we're not used to clip horses, to clip heels.
Right.
When you clip heels, you're going down.
It's not a good sound.
Now I'm riding over there. I'm not afraid to clip heels. Then those guys in front of me, like, click, 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 and I'm like, oh, he's going to go down, so let me get up. I couldn't win a race in the first 2 weeks. So now one day and one morning, the blacksmith came to the barn and he's shooting the horse. And I saw the horseshoe. They have no toe grab.
Oh.
And I'm like, I asked the trainer, is that for racing or is it just to? I mean, yeah, they're for racing. And everybody else is like that. The other horses, yes. I say, oh, no wonder they clip heels and they don't go down.
That's why.
Because the toe grabber is not there, so it just, you hear the noise, but you slide down.
But they slide,
clean,
yeah.
Click, click, click. And then I started clipping it on myself. I was too far back before,
yeah.
And I was afraid to clip heels. So now, I started looking at the top riders, Freddie Head, Yves Saint Martin, the top riders. And they always break, and they'd be like third or fourth, fifth, sixth, clipping heels. But they're in contention.
Right.
And I was, before I was too far back, so now I started doing that. Breaking sharp, getting behind the horses, but I'd be third or fourth, and turning for home, or at the eighth pole, I'd get out and win. And then I started winning.
Clipping heels.
But I was afraid to do that before.
Oh, I would, that sound, I can hear it in the back of my mind, George. It makes me cringe. That would be hard to do. That would be hard to do.
It took me 2 good weeks before I started winning. But then, and then they have about 5 or 6 major racetracks. Then they race 1 day here, 2 days in the other track, 2 days in the other track, and like that. And I was not, acquaintance with the tracks. Until finally, I got to know each racetrack and where to move and how to do it and everything else.
Do you go the different way around the track? Like not going the right way where we go here, but they go the different way around the track, right?
Yeah. That's the racetrack that they go like us over here. But the most of them, they go the right way.
Yeah.
That would make the right turn.
That had to be hard to get. And how about
very uncomfortable, and there's a big field always, 22, 24, 26 horses.
Wow.
And then it's like, wow, man, we're not used to this over here.
No, not unless you're in the Derby. That's about it. How about their riding style? They have a very different riding style over there. Did you try to look like the riders over there, or you just stuck with your own style?
No, I've never changed my style. First of all, because I don't like the style of riding, the way they sit on the horses, or the way they work on it when they're working on the horses. I don't like that style, and I didn't learn that one like that.
Right.
In my country, the more smooth that you are on top of the horse, the best you get the best out of the horses.
Exactly. Exactly.
And but they have their own style, and they win.
That works.
Then don't let them fool you with that style, because they get the maximum out of the horses too.
It does. It seems like so much more movement, though. They move so much more. It seems like kind of wasted energy to me. But
they
like,
move all of, they're like all over the horses,
Hey, it works.
They don't look good at all, let me tell you, but they can ride.
Some
of them are good riders. Good hands and good head. Yeah.
Jockey George Velasquez is joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, George, during the break, we heard the replay of your Kentucky Derby victory. I would like to talk about that as well. That had to be such a wonderful feeling. You've ridden in the Derby before, prior to that, didn't win. But that first Derby win, that had to take us through the race.
I tell you what, it was a big thrill for me. It was like wow. Something that you can hardly believe it, When I passed the wire, let's say that at the beginning of the race, I was way back. And that race was, for me, meant to be for me to win, because it was a big field. It was like a 20-some horse field. And I was laying 17, 18 at the beginning. And I started getting position and turning for the stretch and what you call the backside,
Yeah.
I was getting position, and every time I move, I pass one horse, they open up the door for me. So I had a beautiful trip. I saved all the ground until turning for home. I had to come around 3 horses because I couldn't continue where I was. So I went around and I opened up, And I know, turning for him, that I was a winner. And I said, man, I'm going to win this one. This is my race. I got to look good, too. So I started riding real hard. And we passed the wire. I won it. And who came right next to me? Wood Chopper.
Yes.
A horse that I won a big race with him before the Derby. But I was shopping around for the Derby. So I decided to stay with Pleasant Colony. And Wood Chopper, I beat him by 3/4 of a lane. I said, wow.
He was flying on that side.
Yes. So anyway, when I passed the wire, you know, they always interview you. And I saw the public, so many people. And I'm like, wow, man. Tears started to come out. And I'm like, come on, man. I have to get together. I can't be crying on TV. So I wipe up my face. And then I started the interview and jog back and gallop back to the winner's circle. And it was incredible. It was like, it was meant to be for me, because I remember Jeffrey Fell rode Pleasant Colony. I think it was in, I'm not sure if it was a Wood Memorial. I don't know. It was a mile. No, that was not the Wood Memorial. It was a race. It was going a mile. But Jeffrey Fell was running probably the favorite for the race, for the Derby. Mm-hmm. So I spoke to Campbell, and Mr. Campbell said, yes, you can ride him. But I talked to him before Jeffrey Fell's race, before he won him. So now what happened, I'm watching the race, and the horse won with Jeffrey Fell. So I went and grabbed Campbell. I said, Mr. Campbell, you told me that, yes, I can ride him from the Derby. You still want me to? He said, yeah, I told you, I promised you, so you run. So that was good. He kept his word.
And
I won the race, so I was so happy. Forget about it. I couldn't sleep that night.
I wouldn't be able to either. And to you had to just be thinking, you know, thanking your dad for giving you the dollar for the bus fare every day to go to the track and from working in the rice fields. And then you go and you win the Derby. Like, that had to be just an absolutely incredible feeling. Not only did you win the Derby on Pleasant Colony, you also won the Preakness on Pleasant Colony. Tell us about that race.
That race, I thought it was going to be tough because it's a little shorter than the Derby. But the speed duo helped me. There was a lot of speed in the race, so they went. And I said, about fourth or fifth, and when I made my move, he came charging and he won. So now I won the premium. I said, good, now we're coming to the Belmont Stakes. I said, this is it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to win the Triple Crown because it's a mile and a half. This is what my horse won, the mile and a half.
Right.
And what happened? They put up some of those slow pace. And my horse was, he didn't have no kind of nothing, no speed at all. So you have to leave him alone and just started to work on him when you pass the half a mile pause, you get to the 3-8 corner, and then he comes running. And all depends on the pace also. So I think it was Sherman with George Martins went to the lead and they won like 25, 51. They were walking.
So slow.
And I'm far back. So when I make my move, I was following Jacinto Vasquez, riding Highland Blade. And I come up to Jacinto. I'm assuming have something left, so he went on. I went up third anyway, finished third. I was very disappointed because I thought that race was easier for him to win. But no, not with that kind of pace.
No shot. They didn't come back to you. Right.
They didn't come back. Forget about it. He went all the way. He saw me. Wow. He made the lead never look back. That was a good ride by George Martins. He slowed down the pace.
Yeah.
Tremendously.
But still, what you accomplished with Pleasant Colony, even without the Belmont, was just an incredible story, you know?
Yes, yes, yes.
Tell us about Proud Truth.
Proud Truth is a nice horse, very nice horse. Before Mr. John Veach put the blinkers on, I was telling him, John, he needs the blinkers. Because I got to work on him. Man, I have to start working on him early, from the four and a half, and working on him, until finally I get him running, and then he comes. So now, there was a race before the Breeders' Cup. And I was asking so many times to put the blinkers on. So he put the blinkers on, and there was a little stake. And this time, he was dragging me. And instead of being way back, I'm like very close and sitting there, just sitting, you know. I said, good. I got him where I want to be. With the blinkers, it was a totally different horse. Now here comes the Breeders' Cup. And I did what I want to do. I just broke and took him back myself. Took him back, and when I made my move, he comes running. When I turned him for him, when I saw that it was... What's the name of the horse that used to run with the... Macaron was on him. I can't remember his name right now, but the Jeff Bamberg used to train him.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, well, I saw him in front, and that horse, I know he pulled himself up every time he makes a little swim. So when I was coming on, I said, oh, I got him.
Got him measured.
Yeah, so... I won that race, and I was very, very happy because I know the horse had so much ability, but he was not using it because he was not paying attention in the race. But with the blinkers, he was a different, totally different horse. Totally.
Well, and that had to be so satisfying knowing that you gave Mr. Veach that advice, you know, put the blinkers on the horse, and it worked out for you, but also because... You won the Breeders' Cup Classic aboard Proud Truth. John Veach also trained Aladar, so that had to be a really great feeling to win that big race for him.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, of course. Of course.
George, we only have 5 minutes left. I can't believe how fast this is going by. I'm going to have you come back because there's so much more I want to talk to you about. Secretariat and all those other good stories, George. But I would like to ask you, are you still an agent?
Well, right now I'm not working because I had a little problem with my back, and my back was bothering me. Many years ago, and I think it was 95, I broke my pelvis three places. And I was fine until last year. Last year it started bothering me, and this year was very, very bad. It's very bad. In the last 4 months, I have like six shots. Mm. Of steroids, whatever they put me in there. And still bothers me, you know, but
right.
It's getting better. So
well,
as
good.
Soon I feel up to work, I'll be looking to work for any good rider, any top rider, or any top bug boy.
Well, there we go. Any jockeys listening, George will be back up and working soon. So there you go, George. Who have you had? I know you. So you retired. What was it, 97?
I retired in 97, yes.
So you retired. Why did you decide to retire at that specific time?
Because I had that spill in 95. I was out for 3.5 months. I came back to ride, and I was still in pain. So finally, took off again for another 3 months. Then I was fine. But at the time, I was already 50 years old, and I have nothing else to prove to anybody. And meanwhile, I lost a lot of customers. So I was riding very little and bad horses and all that stuff. So, and I made a family reunion in my meeting with my wife and my three children. And we went to say who say yes to continue and who says no to quit. And everybody say quit, quit, quit. Everybody say no, so I was forced.
Unanimous.
To quit.
You had to quit, George. You had to quit. We only have 1 minute left here, George. It has been so great having you here on the show. And so you do plan on becoming an agent again once you start feeling better?
Yes. Yes, that's what I want to do, yes.
Do you like doing that?
I love it. It's nice. I'm out there every morning. I see people that I know for so many years. And I'm, if I have a typewriter, I can make a little money. And I'll stay in the business.
You had Jose Santos's book, right?
Yeah, I had it for a while, yes, and we did good. We did very good.
And I know, George, you brought up some really good apprentices, too, and that has to be great for them, looking up to a Hall of Famer such as yourself, George. But, wishing you all the best with your back, and, get back out there.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, and it's a pleasure have this interview with you.
George, we'll have to have you back. Seriously, I enjoyed this so much. Thank you so much for doing this.
You're welcome.
Folks, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. While you're there, check out all of the other great shows you can listen to on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Now be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal. Thank you for listening.